Welcome to the video podcast, Richard Gage 9/11 Unleashed, where truth and unity matter. Take the deep dive with highly influential voices in and around the 9/11 truth movement.
And welcome everybody to Richard Gage 9/11 Unleashed again. We are back, and boy, do we have an incredible opportunity. An amazing person with us. I'm so excited, but I'm not going to tell you who he is. Yeah, I will. Foster Gamble of Thrive On. And so let's bring Gail in before she starts letting us know what all the secrets are. Oh, Foster, we're going to put you away. You didn't see that. No. Foster will be back with us in just a moment. We've got some, that was him. I've really got him here in the studio, don't we, Gail?
He has a sneak preview there, yes.
Yes, my wife and my assistant and our COO at Richard Gage 9/11, Ms. Gail Gage. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, Richard. Thank you.
Hey, great. I'm glad to hear that. And before we bring on our exciting guest, we want to let people know about what today.
Well, the most exciting thing coming up very soon is our 9/11 con, the Pentagon.
Yeah, that is happening in 2 days, you guys. 9/11 con, the Pentagon. We've got the four major researchers of the Pentagon. What happened? What didn't happen in the 9/11 truth movement? These theories, frankly, are at odds with each other. And we're bringing all of them into the same venue for the first time ever. All day, and I mean all day, 10 a.m. Pacific to 10 p.m. Pacific. That's what it takes. Each of them has an hour and a half. They'll be presenting. They'll be taking questions from the other presenters. And then 2 hours at the end for you guys to present your questions. So after getting a full day of information about the Pentagon and what did or didn't happen, this is unprecedented. So don't miss this. It is happening at Saturday, March 19th. Just go to 911con.org. It's that simple. 911con.org. Make a donation of any amount. And we suggest $25 minimum. It's an all-day conference. We've worked really hard. We spent a lot of money on software to make this an incredible opportunity for you guys to network with each other. Gail, what else do we have going on?
Well, we've got some podcasts coming up. And the podcast that we had prior to this one was Richard Grove, excuse me, and that was a week ago, so I don't know if everybody was able to catch that podcast.
Yep, and that was amazing. Richard Grove of Autonomy. He's created his own university. Watch it archived at richardgage911.org.
And he interviewed you also, so that interview should be coming up too.
Yeah.
And then we have coming up ahead of us is Art Olivier. Unleashed.
Yep. He's created the movie Terror Storm, a fictional account of what might have happened on 9/11. So we'll be showing clips from that film, and you'll get to meet the filmmaker himself, Art Olivier.
Yes. And after that, we have Aidan Monaghan. Am I saying his name correctly?
And Aidan's done research into the hijackers, the actual control of the planes, four of them, on 9/11. And he's got some important evidence for us. When's that happening?
That is on the 24th.
Yay.
Thursday the 24th.
All right. So don't miss that. And without further ado, let's introduce our wonderful guest. And I want to tell you guys something about Foster Gamble. I mean, come and meet a visionary who spent the better part of his career researching, imagining, and creating solutions to the most pressing problems that we face in our society today. He pulls no punches pointing out these problems. He says, we must first become aware of them and their source. Enormous problems such as mass deception on a global scale. and the vast hidden agenda by an unseen group of world controllers like the Rothschilds. Yes, he names names. You're going to hear them today. That require incredible lies to keep their aims hidden in plain sight. Manipulations of the public mind include the phenomena of false flag events like 9/11 that have started almost every war in modern times, from World Wars I and II to Vietnam to the numerous 9/11 wars, including Afghanistan and Iraq and now Ukraine. He's going there with us because without our recognition of the problem, we remain unable, even unwilling, to take part in the solution that would free ourselves from our own slavery. But he told me that we're focusing today in this podcast primarily upon the solutions available, not at the level of the problems, but at a higher level these solutions are, which transcends those problems. My take on his mission is that he would see these problems and their creators not only solved the problems of the creators too, yes, but rendered irrelevant. And that takes extraordinary vision and massive teamwork, which he's going to share with us in this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Foster Gamble. Hi, Foster.
Hi there. Great to be with you, Richard. Hi, Gail.
Hi, Foster.
Pretty awesome. And since you've agreed to take a few tough questions from our audience, Gail is going to be looking for those. How do people ask the questions for our esteemed guest, Gail?
So on the platform that you're watching from, YouTube or Facebook, in the comment section under the video, you just type in your question and I will be looking for the questions in the comments. I will copy and paste them over and then I'll read them for our guest Foster. And just remember when you're asking the questions, one thing to remember is to kind of go over and review your question a little bit just to make sure that it makes sense and you got it all, complete sentence there. Yes, exactly. So I'm not trying to figure out exactly what you're trying to say. But other than that, just, think of some really good questions, anything that you've been wanting to ask or that come up, questions that come up during the podcast.
Yay. Well, thanks, Gail. We'll let you go and do your good work and see you in a while, okay? We'll be back with Ms. Gail. And Foster, how have you been since I have seen you last? It's been years.
I know. We haven't seen one another in person for, several years, but a lot of water under the bridge for both of us and in the world since that time. But I think we've been on very parallel courses, and it's great to be with you again.
Yeah, you too, so much. Well, let me ask you this, Foster, first. How did you become aware of the truth about 9/11? And why did you decide to speak out about it?
Well, I was actually in my home in Santa Cruz on the morning of 9/11, and I watched the entire thing, the immediate broadcast. And of course, it was horrifying to see what was going on and imagine what it was like for the people in those buildings. But when the first building fell, I mean, I've spent a lifetime in science and especially in physics. And looking at that thing came down, I said to my wife, Kimberly, I said, that's doesn't look right. Something's wrong about that. And I was actually scheduled to be on a radio show the next day. And so, of course, the host asked me about what did you think of those events? And I said, well, it's horrifying. And I think we really need to suspend judgment here until we find out what really happened and especially find out who benefits from what we all saw, because it doesn't look like a straightforward situation, doesn't look like what we're being told is actually what happened. Now, for me, I had already been, a decade in the field of new energy and seen the suppression of successful inventors. So I was already, quite skeptical of government agendas. But then for me, When I saw the first video of Building 7, I was like, that was it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now I have no doubt that we're being lied to. Still didn't know what was going on, but that was really the clincher for me. And then as I started to investigate and started to see the work of people Dylan Avery with Loose Change and David Ray Griffin with his books, when I saw, you know, the clip of Larry Silverstein saying they needed to pull Building 7, you know, the pieces started lining up for me. And then especially as I realized, oh, okay, well, there's no evidence of plane or luggage or passengers in Shanksville. There's not room for that plane in the hole in the Pentagon. And then when I saw the PNAC document about the, you know, all we need is a new Pearl Harbor, I was like, okay, I think we're on to it. And then I've got to say, and I'm not just blowing in your ear, but for me, really, the whole thing started to ground when you guys started coming out with the Architects and Engineers Truth, with all your videos and articles and stuff. I said, okay, some really responsible, knowledgeable people are on the facts and evidence, because for all the research into potential agendas, without the facts and evidence, it's not going to be grounded. So that's what really started to ground the whole thing out for me. And then I, you know, been intensely studying Judy Wood, especially Barbara Honegger, who's a longtime friend, did dynamite work. I'm thrilled to see that you're having her over the weekend on your con conference. And by the way, I want to congratulate you on that, because that's the kind of dialogue we need to have. Mm. All my life, I've made a point of seeking out the brightest, most expert people I could find, especially if they disagreed with each other. And then I could learn from the dialogue rather than just being impressed by one or the other. So thank you for doing that. And then also, yeah. I want to, at some point in the conversation, I want to hear more about this this crime scene to courtroom thing that you're doing, because that too, I've been looking forward to something like that for a long time. So I even wanted to, I read the novels of Rebecca Roth, and I you know, they were done as novels for understandable reasons, but I felt like I learned a lot more about the kind of passenger flight attendant view on the whole thing. And then finally, for me, David Icke's book Trigger was a huge one, because I'd never seen anyone lay out never seen anyone follow the money, you know, the means, motive, and opportunity as thoroughly as he did in that book. So that's how.
Well, that's what I. Yeah, that's what I want to. That's why I want to bring David in to talk about what he researched there in Trigger, because now that I'm unleashed, we can go there. We can find out who's responsible, and he and others as well have done this work. So what you were going to say something else.
Well, that was my intention back on September 11th last year when I invited you and David to come on my show, and the title of it was 9/11 Truth, the Scheme and the Science, because I thought that would be really powerful to have the two of you there. It turned out, for you know, reasons in your own adventure, that couldn't happen on that day. But I look forward to, if you can get him on your show, I would think he would be thrilled to come on, and you guys can finally have that conversation, bringing those two worlds together.
Yeah, and it's important. And yeah. I continually have to ask myself, how unleashed am I? To bring on, you know, David Icke is fairly controversial. You must have faced the same set of questions yourself with your own audience about bringing on somebody who the media has, in particular, has casted him as the ultimate conspiracy theorist. And so am I ready for David Icke? I think so.
Oh, I think so too. I mean, he, you know, you're among the very top researchers that I've ever found in terms of your accuracy. Because I follow people over time to see, okay, are they holding up? And David is too. For all of his remarkable claims, I've been studying him for at least 15 years. Read virtually everything that he wrote. And then I went around and interviewed a lot of the people that he had made claims about, or got as close to them as I could. And I would say 95 to 98% of the stuff that he was saying, I have verified. And so he's become this incredible source. There are some things like when he's talking about reptilians that it's a real stretch for almost all of us. But when I interviewed him for Thrive One, you know, over 10 years ago, the very first question I asked, well, I said to him, I said, we're going to need to distinguish rigorously between facts, opinion, and wild speculation. He said, great, I'm all for that. And he actually acknowledged that he had been in error in being too casual about the reptilian perspective. And I said, well, what made you think you know, you've talked about it as just as if it were true, but you haven't actually proven it. So why did you talk about it that way? And he said, you know, I got a little sloppy because I was contacted by people with firsthand stories from 30 different countries that he checked out that verified all of this. And then he was invited by Credo Mutua to go to Africa and spent weeks with him there. And Credo Mutua is, you know, the real deal. He's the head of the whole Zulu verbal spiritual tradition, has had firsthand contact with these reptilians and knows the lore going back generations. So even that could be true. But, you know, I'm a researcher myself. I want to be exposed to everything, but I try not to claim anything is true until I've verified it myself.
All right. So stepping back into the safety net of 9/11, isn't that funny? I have my safety net, which is far outside of most people in this country's safety net. Yeah. But not that I need safety, but we do want to focus on the problems that we can all identify with. Well, at least in the 9/11 truth movement, where I represent a large body of people in some fashion, I represent them. But 9/11 changed the world. And since you have become aware of those sources that you cited, how has it impacted your worldview, and what have you done regarding that with your work?
Yeah, well, as much as I've studied 9/11 for literally two decades, I still don't consider myself an expert in it. You know, experts are people more like you who've just been dedicated to it full time and have really laid the groundwork for the evidence. I'm more of like a private investigator. You know, if there's a serial rapist or killer in your neighborhood, you know, you don't want to have to wait for all of the scientific evidence to come in. You want to try to find out what the heck is going on. Who might this be? You know, how can we catch them? Then how can we interrogate them? And hopefully, if they're guilty, you know, take them out of commission, you know, obsolete them, get them where they can't do any harm. So that's a lot of my interest in 9/11 has been in the fact that it's a technique. You know, it was a false flag operation. You know, we had the Kennedy assassination. We go back to Lincoln assassination. We go back to the Trojan horse, you know, and some of the false flags that you mentioned. People have been using this. Perpetrators have been using this to try to conceal their actions and get something going that they want to get going without being overt about it for, you know, throughout recorded history. So I do believe 9/11 was probably the grandest one in history, and right up there with, you know, the Reichstag fire and the sinking of the Lusitania in terms of destructive impact on people's lives. So for me, what the particular interest is who would be behind something like that, and how are they benefiting from fooling so many people? Why would they be willing to sacrifice so many people? You know, ultimately, what is their agenda? Can we verify that? And then if it truly is a destructive agenda, you know, how can we stop it and turn it around?
Good point. So what is your answer to that question? Because I know you, of all people, have developed some answers.
Well, they Thrive One is still on YouTube, so that's a good sign. And this is not wild speculation, but the larger picture that I see, which I hoped never to see, but which has proven only more consistent in the 30 years that I've been researching it, is that unfortunately there is a huge covert agenda. I just call it the global domination agenda, because it's an agenda that isn't dependent on a few people. There are key people involved. There's the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and the Bushes and the Cheneys and the Kissingers and Philip Zelikow and the Clintons and so forth. There are people involved, but as they come and go, more people fill those spots. So it's important for people to understand that it's not just, but it is at its core an agenda. And the agenda does not have yours and my best interest in mind. So what is the agenda? And I would say, in a nutshell, I would say that it's like a bad James Bond movie, like a typical movie, but a bad one. And the agenda is simply world domination. You know, it's to actually control all the money, all the resources, and all the people on planet Earth. And that sounds ridiculous when you just say it out if you're not familiar with it. But then you start looking at the evidence, and this is what we did in Thrive One, is we literally, in every sector, you know, in food, in energy, in money, education, health, we literally followed the money in every single sector. And lo and behold, I didn't know this when I was starting my research, but one of the reasons we made the movie is you follow the money in any one of those sectors, it goes back to the same individuals and secret societies, major, you know, famous institutions and so forth. And then when you look to see, okay, well, what are they doing in those sectors? They are lying. They are cheating, oftentimes assassinating, in order to control energy so that they can control people through energy, in order to control food so they can control people through food, in order to control the media, the mainstream media and Hollywood, ultimately to control the universities and so forth, so that they can control what people think, so that ultimately they can manipulate those people into basically surrendering to them, going, okay, we need a one world government. That'll be the source of peace. You guys take over. Unfortunately, that has turned out to be verified by everything I've researched for 30 years.
Wow. There are some solutions for this. Is there not? Give us some hope here.
Yeah. If the agenda is using deception and coercion and fake money and so forth to accomplish their agenda, the solution is to already be building alternative systems. So real education, you probably talked with Richard Grove about this. I just did a show with him last week about the real role of education, where kids get nurtured and their curiosity gets satisfied and they get great, inspiring teachers rather than getting indoctrinated into government propaganda. So that's it in education. In food, you know, permaculture, you know, polyculture, organic farming, food to table. You know, this is what actually nurtures our bodies and our souls, and it's been really suppressed. You know, chemtrails, GMOs, pesticides. I could go on and on, but the bottom line is that the food has been taken over. The education, as I mentioned, has been taken over. So the key that we have come to, and when I say we, I mean particularly my dear wife Kimberly, who's you know, co-written and produced all the movies. And what we have come to in our team and network is that the key is to recognize the destruction of whole systems in every sector, and then to discover, to study, you know, to learn how to restore the wholeness of natural systems in every single sector. So that is now happening with alternative honest currencies instead of, you know, fiat money and fractional reserve and all these banking scams, you know, honest cryptocurrencies, you know, precious metals backed hard currencies and so forth. It's happening in education and it's happening in food. I've been involved a lot in the new energy movement, where there are already multiple free energy devices on the planet. The government has them in their black ops projects. I've talked to whistleblowers who have seen them, who worked on them. And so we're in the process of bringing those out. The great news, and this is why we Kimberly and I made Thrive too. We never thought we'd make another documentary feature. But we saw whole system solutions in every single sector. And we realized, wow, not only is it possible to solve these problems, people have already solved all of these problems, including in the health sector, major cancer cures, chronic fatigue, the whole deal. And yet they're being suppressed by this agenda, by these authority figures who don't want a healthy population on planet Earth, do not want a democracy, much less individual sovereignty, you know, do not want truth in media. And so I believe that that whole system of corruption is now starting to collapse. And as it collapses, I'm trying to urge people to get the solutions on the table. You know, already have eco communities and great schools and honest currencies and so forth, so that when the house of cards collapses, we can naturally go to the viable, healthy alternatives rather than just panicking and going, okay, bring in the next authoritarian regime, which is what it's been throughout history. So those are that's the approach to solutioning that we're taking. And we also were building a tool that I can go into when you want to facilitate collaboration amongst ethical solutionaries in every sector worldwide.
Is that the Thrive Solutions Hub?
Yes, exactly.
Well, let's go into it because I see it right here and it looks like it's got the different sectors all lined up. Have you got some positive movement in this hub?
Yeah, it's very exciting. And we feel that this is the major thing that is missing that we can offer to humanity right now, which is to have a platform that is only available to ethical solutionaries. If you're coming in with, you know, coercive dictatorships as your solution, you're not going to be a member of the hub. If you're being dishonest or immoral in any way, you're not going to be a member of the hub. But if you qualify, which most of our friends and allies do, then you can sign up for a membership in the Solutions Hub, and you can have a space where you promote your work, and then you catalog it by sector. Is it in the justice sector or arts or media, relations, justice, et cetera? And then other people can find you when they look by sector into their interests, and then they can follow your activities. Also, as people develop successful lawsuits, great videos like you guys have done in 9/11 Truth and the architects and engineers, when you develop these great resources, then you can link to them or upload them to our archives, and then other solutions groups worldwide can access them, and they don't have to develop their own flyers. They don't have to develop their own funding techniques, their own lawsuits and so forth. So we're looking to save each other time by sharing resources and best practices. And then also one of the major purposes of it is what we call broadcast messaging. And this is where if you've got like the event, you know, when we get you into the Solutions Hub, the event that you've got coming up day after tomorrow, that's such an important event for so many people that could be broadcast out to what we call our network for networks. So you got your own network that you can mail to, but the struggle is always, you know, how do I expand my reach? In the hub, you will be able to send a message to the coordinators of all the different networks that are related to the work that you're doing. And then the coordinators will have the option of passing it on to their network or not. So we can instantly reach, you know, thousands of networks worldwide without betraying the trust that a leader like yourself has developed. You've developed your following because people trust your work over time. So we would never send things to your network, but we can send it to you. And then you decide, okay, am I going to pass this along or not? So this is an open source, decentralized platform that we have had our software teams developing for like a year and a half. Wow. It's now in beta, has been for a few months, and there's over 150 groups and over 600 individuals trying it. We haven't opened it to the public yet. We're just about to. And we got another two dozen big groups that are about to join. And then once we've got that all squared away, then we'll open it up to the public when we know that it's absolutely secure and user-friendly enough that people can drive their dashboard of effective solutioning.
Wow. It sounds like we're ready to go for that. I mean, we've been needing something like this for a long, long time.
Exactly.
You built up to it too. You had a start with such a hub, did you not? Earlier on, after following the incredible success of Thrive One, which was seen by what, 20 million people?
No, it's over 94 million now.
Oh, incredible.
It went on to become, if not the most widely seen documentary, at least in the top few in history. And we were thrilled because that showed that people were ready to handle the truth and so that they could actually take effective action. But yeah, when Kimberly and I were traveling around doing screenings around the world with Thrive One, we found that there were solutions groups that were self-creating, inspired by the movie and the sectors, in every community that we visited. And so that's when we made our first hub so that people could share resources and connect with each other. And that was super successful. We had about 1,300 groups around the world dealing with several hundred different issues. And this is now, it's Solutions Hub 2.0.
Okay.
Because the new one is now mobile friendly. It's got a much larger reach. And they're, you know, back in 2011, we didn't have the censorship that we've got now. So now we had to build in lots of security aspects so people could do private video conferencing and messaging and chatting and that type of thing.
Wow.
So this is a continuation of that.
This is incredible. You've got the whole, it's all laid out here. Introduction to the Thrive Solutions model, solutions hub profile, group roles, structure, and process. You're not horsing around here, are you?
Well, I've dedicated my life, my reputation, and taken a lot of risks and basically spent all my money, making sure that these truths are out in the world. You probably know what I mean from personal experience, but I wouldn't change it for anything. It's been so satisfying just to be a part of this global alliance of truth tellers and freedom lovers who are in fact now liberating humanity from this global domination agenda. And this, once we've got this tool out there, then it's open source. You know, we give away everything we've developed will now be available to other people. And so it can't be stopped. You know, if they take me out, it won't help at all. There's lots of brilliant young people all over the world who now have this torch lit and are carrying it forward. So it'll be a dream come true, and it's coming very soon.
Oh, perfect. Well, let's take a couple examples if we can, each of these sectors, say a couple of minutes each. What are we doing with regard to the central worldview sector?
Well, worldview is really has to do with what is your understanding? What's your belief about what's really going on in the world? The geometry of the vector equilibrium, for any of your folks who have who've seen the movies, is the fundamental geometry of the universe. So we modeled the whole thing after that. And that's 12 points equidistant from a center point. And so the center point, we have 13 sectors. The center point is worldview, because you see everything that you do in your life, you see it through your own lens, through your own belief system. So worldview is really probably the central sector. We teach people to find their purpose, then choose which sector or sectors they want to work in, then which issues they want to work in, and then finally, what level of engagement. And by level of engagement, we mean, do you want to work on meeting personal needs, like working in a soup kitchen or, you know, Doctors Without Borders or something like that? Or are you more oriented towards systemic change? Do you want to work on the money systems or communication systems or education systems and so forth? Or the third and final category is the consciousness shift itself. And that means actually digging into the facts and evidence, digging into the philosophical coherence so that your worldview more and more matches the reality. Because the more your worldview matches reality, the better your systems are going to work. And the better your systems work, the more that immediate needs are going to be met. So there's a lot of philosophers. There's a lot of educators. There's a lot of spiritual teachers, people like that who really work on the consciousness itself, who are a part of our network and just helping people to clarify their mind and their understanding.
Wow. And I imagine that is the first step. But let's take it to economics. How does that become practical in the economics sector?
Yeah, well, the economics is a critical one right now because the major tool that the global domination agenda has used to try to take over the world is fake money. You know, it used to be that you had to actually earn your money and you put it in the bank. And if you went to get it out, it was there. Well, nowadays, a few people have fooled most of the population of the world to give them the authority, give the elite, the few, the authority to actually print money whenever they want and to take it from other people as taxation. So if you were playing a Monopoly and only one person in the game was able to make up money whenever they wanted, how long would it take them to take over the board? That's what's happening on planet Earth. So in our website at thriveon.com and in the Solutions Hub, we have extensive information about, well, what is economics really? In fact, next month we're doing our whole month of shows is on economics, and we're having Doug Casey and Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'll be doing a Seven Levels Deep, just laying out the whole history of how economics has been taken over by lies. So we expose the lies in that sector, and then we talk about, okay, what are the real solutions? Like honest cryptocurrency, like barter, like local private membership associations, all sorts of solutions that are based on telling the truth, you know, and keeping your agreements rather than what's going on in the world right now.
Good God, this is very good. What does blockchain fit into this?
Absolutely, and blockchain is really one of the major battlegrounds right now because blockchain is honest. If it's an independent, honest blockchain, you have the ability to create an honest medium of exchange and storehouse of wealth. So the government has allowed it so far, but their agenda is becoming more and more clear that they're only planning on allowing it until they can take it over. Other people building the infrastructure, then the government wants to take it over and create what they call CBDCs, central bank digital currencies. They're already doing it in China. And this is how the government gets rid of all cash and gets access to everyone's bank account and all transactions in their country and worldwide. And at that point, you are in a complete global dictatorship because like they're doing in China right now with the social credit score, anytime that you don't behave in alignment with their agenda, they'll just cut off your money. As well as cut off your permissions to, you know, go to school, get on airplanes, go to restaurants, food stores, and so forth. So crypto, it can be one of our salvations along with, you know, honest precious metals and so forth. Or if the governments are allowed to take it over, it could become the ultimate downfall where we literally become slaves of the state and everybody ends up losing everything that they've worked hard for.
So it takes our vigilance really against the government and the direction, their trajectory with regard to taking control of the money on behalf of the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, it's the only way out now is for individuals and organizations to stand up for integrity, you know, stand up for truth. The other thing besides the on a practical level, the Solutions Hub that I believe humanity is missing to our own peril, and we go into this in Thrive 1 and 2, is a universal morality. You know, it used to be just whoever had the biggest club would be in charge, and then you had the kings, and you had the priests, and then you ultimately the religions emerged and actually brought in the idea of ethics. But then the churches all fought with each other over what God's word really was and created huge devastation. And then the state came in with the rule of law, which sounds great, and it can be, depending on what the laws are. But then the state surpassed the church as the biggest murdering institution in history, with over 200 million deaths in the 20th century alone, just within borders. That's not counting wars. That's just leaders killing their own people. Mm. So we're obviously not there yet in terms of morality. But what we lay out in Thrive 2 especially is that the basis of a universal morality, the only serious candidate I've ever seen is what we call the non-aggression principle. Huh. And that means that nobody is allowed to initiate force against anyone else except in true self-defense. If someone's attacking you, you have the right to defend yourself, but no one has the right to assault, to rob, to rape, to murder, or to commit fraud against anyone else. And that, to me, that is the key that unlocks the door to a thriving humanity. It sounds really simple, but if you take it and unpack it into its real implications, the universal application of that is what we call voluntarism. So, you know, you've got socialism and fascism and even democracy, which is basically mob rule. If you transcend all of that and actually adhere to the non-aggression principle completely, then you end up with what's called voluntarism. And that means that everybody is a sovereign being and no one has the right to violate them. And the implication that everybody says, oh, that sounds great. You know, I want that. And in fact, it's the one thing that I've found that anywhere in the world where we've traveled, every single person we've ever met does not want to be violated against their will. So that's a good clue that maybe this is the natural basis for a universal morality. But the problem arises because we've been indoctrinated for about 400 years into the nation state, that we have to be ruled by somebody somehow. Yeah. And since governments depend on taxation, and taxation at the root of it is taking someone else's money, whether they like it or not, which is theft, it actually philosophically rules out authoritarian governments. You can have clubs, you can have memberships, you can have associations, institutions, and all that, as long as they're voluntary. Nobody is initiating coercion against someone else. So there's tremendous hope. It's the simplest thing imaginable, but hardly anyone on the planet understands it yet. And even those who are beginning to, it's a heavy lift to actually give up our attachment to government being like our mommy or our daddy, because they've turned into vicious bullies. And we need to, the only way out of that is actually to get rid of the cancerous philosophy at the basis of it, which is that a few people should have the right to take other people's money and rule them.
Yes. And so in the government sector, have you developed a model that takes voluntarism into its kind of expanded reality, where we are a country with borders? Do we have a model to rule ourselves without a centralized government, and could that work? Are you working on that?
Absolutely. That's the main thing I'm working on, and I'll be working on it till my last breath. I'm about 2/3 of the way through a book that I'm writing about it. I've written a ton of articles that are available on our website. In my show, The Freedom Portal, that's the main thing that the entire show is dedicated to. So I have done 2 months of shows with some of the living experts on this, laying out, is there any historical evidence that it could work to not have an authoritarian state? And there's a ton of it. Oh. Imagining in the future, if we were in a stateless society, how could that work? So we lay that out in great detail. And anybody who spends real time with it, it's so logical and coherent. And when you look at your friendships, you look at your family life, you look at your marriage, they're not authoritarian dictatorships, hopefully. They're actually working it out by honoring each other's sovereignty. And we can do that globally. And the It's not that there wouldn't be any institutions. You would still have security organizations and insurance organizations. You would have multiple dispute resolution organizations, but all of them would be independently competing in the free market for, you know, to prove that they've got a reliable service at a reasonable price and that they're not violating the non-aggression principle. That's the total game changer. And I'm probably 30 to 50 years ahead of my time with this. You know, no one wants to debate me on it, but a lot of people don't want to talk about it because it's just such a mind blower. And of course, every government, the first thing that a government does, you know, when they get in charge is create the rules to keep them in power. So anybody who questions the power of a king or a dictator or a pharaoh or a democracy, as soon as anybody questions their right to rule, then they're called, it's called sedition. It's called treason. Mm. You know, you're a traitor to the country. You should be locked up or shot or something like that.
Yeah, love it or leave it.
Exactly. That's the game. And they start indoctrinating kids, you know, in kindergarten, literally. And then they have them for 12, 14, 16 years in the government system to persuade them not to challenge that. But it's so important that I honestly believe after a lifetime of research that this is, in fact, our way out of the lethal predicament that we've gotten ourselves into. So well, in the governance section, just one final comment on that. In the governance section, most of the projects are things like getting rid of Citizens United, you know, giving a corporate person, giving corporations the right to be considered as persons and so forth. So those are transition stages while we've still got government to and ways to reuse the excess money that's spent on the military and the fake money that comes out of the Federal Reserve, but we all pay interest on it. When that's rededicated to creating a thriving society, ultimately governance as rule would disappear, even though ethical rules will be the core of society.
Wow. Well, just imagining it. I mean, at a minimum, what you're doing is painting a vision for us where we can, in the absence of our authoritarian rulers who have shown themselves to be distrustful and if not wicked, you know, is it simply a matter of waking up the people to their misdeeds and then throwing them out of office and electing new representatives that we hopefully can trust to replace them?
Well, I think in transition, we need a lot of that. Because there are good, well-intended people who are in government. And some of them last for a while. Usually they're thrown out because they're not going along with the agenda. But the single most dangerous thing that you could do, if you were like creating a new world, the single most dangerous thing that you could do is create hierarchical pyramid structures where the person or a few people at the top get to rule everyone else, and they get to rule everyone else by stealing their money and lying to them. That would be insane. You just wouldn't design something like that, because what that would do would be attract the sociopaths and the psychopaths, people who actually want to control everyone else and who don't have any compulsions about lying, cheating, stealing, and killing. It would draw those people, and then they would naturally be promoted through their lack of scruples to positions of control, because the government is not the top of the pyramid. The government is being run by the banks, and the banks are being run by the central banks, and the central banks are being run by the secret societies. So the people at the top, the government is just an enforcement arm. So you've actually, the first process is just waking people up as much as possible. That's why we spent the last, you know, 15 years making movies about this and why I have my show, the Freedom Portal. But then after that, what we've found is the people want to go deeper in the conversation. I'm sure you found this with 9/11 Truth, too, that once people get exposed enough, if they can handle it emotionally, If they can handle some truth, then they want to go deeper. And once they go deep enough to realize any big picture of what's really going on, then they want to see it in context for connecting the dots, not just on 9/11 and the implications of that in, you know, in the Middle East and so forth. But how does the 9/11 connect with the other false flags? How does it connect with the creation of these authoritarian unions, the European Union, the African Union, and so forth around the world? How does it relate to the money system? You know, 9/11 was a lot of 9/11 was about hiding major bonds that were destroyed, you know, because there was a lot of, you know, multi-billion dollar shenanigans going on that they needed to destroy the evidence. A lot of the Patriot Act and the Project for a New American Century was intended to go in to the Middle East and not only take their oil, but take their gold. That doesn't get publicized in the mainstream, but they essentially took their gold, destroyed their currency, and then installed a Rothschild central banking system, because this is the system by which they're doing the takeover. And most people have never even heard of it, much less realize that it is the Nazism of today. It is the tool by which the few would-be controllers are trying to literally dominate all of us.
Well, those who are not sociopaths who rise in our system of government to positions of leadership, it seems like they're also vulnerable to blackmail and bribery. So maybe the centralized leadership model doesn't work, but isn't that what our forefathers fought for and provided to us?
Absolutely. And my father fought in World War II. My grandfather fought in World War I. And for me to see the freedoms that they risked their lives for being given away voluntarily, but without understanding, to this global agenda. It's really a socialist, communist, technocratic agenda. It's not as simple as just the old dictatorships of the future. They're planning on using technocracy, technocracy is technology combined with coercion, with rule, but ruling us, monitoring, tracing, tracking, injecting things into us so that they can rule us very efficiently through technology. I think that's the greatest threat on the planet today, is people's ignorance about the technocratic and ultimately the transhumanist agenda, which not only wants to take over our lives, it wants to take over our money, it wants to take over our bodies, and ultimately our consciousness. So it's a very real, very big thing.
Huh.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the show?
We're still on governance, and I'm personally challenged because I was asked to come speak at Anarchapulco in Acapulco, Mexico, and this is a group of anarchists. And the first time I went down there 2 years ago, I thought I was going to be facing black-clothed, violent, anti-U.S. extremists, like Antifa in Kenosha. Yeah. Well, they're just the opposite. Like you're describing here, they have a vision for a world free of authoritarian rule, and many of them challenge the basis of the actual constitution, which was provided to us. And I think what you're saying, and I think what they're saying, is that is a stepping stone. Can you describe that and where we might go from there in terms of practical self-rule?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I was thrilled to see that they had invited you down there, and I've spoken at Anarchapulco, and it's a super inspiring event, and I've watched it grow over the years from like 60 people. The next year they had 300. The next year they had 700. The next year they were sold out in 2 weeks at 1,500. They keep expanding the venue, and people are coming in from all the different political parties. They're coming from different countries, all different ages. And that is a glimpse of the future world, because they're not coming together around, creating chaos in the world. They're coming together around, okay, what's the coherent moral philosophy, which can be the basis of a very well-organized, smoothly running civilization that's based on the non-aggression principle rather than who's got the most money and the biggest guns. So the systems they're talking about, we'd like to just sum it up as rules but no rulers. Uh-huh. And all the rules come out of the non-aggression principle. So there'll be rules on pollution that you can't, violate someone else with your noise, with your pollution, with your activities. But you, at the same time, you need to honor their sovereignty. So any person who is violating in any way is held responsible, is held accountable personally. You can't hide behind, you can get insurance, but you can't hide behind corporate liability anymore. So the CEO of a corporation, it won't be a corporation in the future because that's a government entity, it'll simply be a business, or a club or an association. So uh-huh. Everyone is held individually accountable, not only for their violations of other individuals, but for their violations of ecosystems. And this is a huge part of what will actually solve the ecological problems on the planet, because obviously we need to exploit nature to live. You know, we need wood, we need vegetables, we need water and so forth. So we're exploiting nature and nature's exploiting us. But we don't need to destroy ecosystems in the process. Oh. I have a friend who's the youngest ever chief of a Native American tribe up in Alaska. And he tells me these stories. They've lived for literally thousands of years in harmony with the seals and the caribou, because they eat them, but they never destroy the coherence of the ecosystem itself. So the future systems will all be voluntary. They'll all adhere to the non-aggression principle. And as these systems emerge, it's going to happen so fast that it's going to make our heads spin. We're going to be in a thriving world faster than virtually anyone can imagine. And in my research over the last 10 years, the most exciting thing to me was not only that it could work, but that we're already instinctively moving there. There are more private cops in the United States than there are government cops. So that's independent law enforcement. It's independent security.
It's a voluntary arrangement.
What's that?
It's a voluntary arrangement.
Exactly. There, over 90% of civil cases are resolved in the American justice system outside of the court, outside of the government courthouse. They're resolved through independent mediation or arbitration. So the move to, I never even used the word anarchy because so many people just misunderstand it, that they don't know what I'm talking about. I use voluntarism or sovereignty, because people want to do what they want to do and they don't want to be mistreated. So I believe that we need to communicate with people the opportunity to have the freedom that they have in their family, as long as they're not in an abusive family, to have that with the global family and get this authority out of the way, because that's the root of the problems in every single sector that's on your screen there.
Wow. Well, we've got about 8 more hours, Foster. So let's take them one by one. No, I'm just kidding. But could you mention your personal work with free energy technology and talk about its potential to help humanity?
Yeah. Well, it's something I've been dedicated to researching for 30 years, actively involved with technologies for 20 years. There have been and if anybody wants some background on this, make sure you see Thrive 2 if you haven't already, because we actually visit with some of the successful free energy inventors. They're all still dealing with the political challenges, the security challenges of getting it out into the world. But the cool thing is that all of these technologies the physics of it matches the philosophy of the non-aggression principle. So instead of crushing things and fusing and fizzing and exploding things in order to yank the energy out of nature's materials, it turns out that all of nature, the entire cosmos, is full of virtually infinite energy at every point. And if that's true, and all the major physicists agree about that, now the evidence is in, if that's true, then our major challenge is how do we access that energy through harmoniously rather than violently? I guess that's our challenge in all these sectors. But in terms of energy, all the working devices that I have seen, they're all toroidal in nature. They all have this donut-shaped vortex. This, you might have seen it in, Yeah, that one, all those little toruses. Every single device that I've seen work has toruses in them because this is how nature works. So what we're doing is mimicking how nature dances. And then if you get the materials right and you get the frequencies right of the how electrons move in these things, basically what it does is it's like, you know, tuning guitars in a band or something like that. Once you all come into resonance, it starts to sound good. And the universe goes, yes, thank you, and starts feeding you as much energy as you can handle.
Oh, it's a matter of tuning in this case, technology.
Exactly. It's dancing with the universe instead of fighting with the universe.
Wow. And there are specific examples of technologies that you've seen that actually produce more energy output than they have on input?
Absolutely. And if anybody doubts that that's even possible, because we've been indoctrinated to think that, you know, there's no such thing as a perpetual motion machine. And that's correct, because any machine is made out of material and material is going to give out. It's the source of energy that's perpetual. You know, remember, the sun is not plugged into anything. You know, we get most of our energy from the sun. It's not plugged into the wall somewhere. Energy doesn't come from the wall. So it comes from the universe, because every solar system, every galaxy, we're all free energy devices who are consuming little toruses in the form of, you know, electrons and protons and so forth. But the potential of then of accessing energy in a way that's inexpensive, that's clean, and that's safe is already here. Some of the inventors do it through magnetism. Others do it through tuning radio frequencies. Others do it through moving electrons through particular geometries at certain frequencies. There's one that we filmed. We haven't put it out yet, but we filmed a device in Thailand that you start it with a car battery, then you take the battery off and it runs on its own. And it has these beautiful arrangements of these different toroidal coils, and it focuses all the energy into the center. It focuses 20,000 volts into the core. And then it has these things where they tune it with these electronic circuit boards and so forth, tune it, step it down so that you can put it out into 60 hertz and, you know, run your home on it. So there are multiple devices like that. And I would say within a couple of years, it'll be like the beginning of the cell phone. We'll see them everywhere, and they won't be able to stop it.
Yeah. Well, when that happens, are we free of the authoritarian system just by virtue of being free of their energy grid?
No, it's a huge step. As I mentioned earlier, the global domination agenda is the scheme is very, very brilliant. It's just nefarious. It's really nasty, but it's very well thought through for, you know, not just decades, but centuries. And so they're actually, we would need to deal with it in every sector. In the, what we call the infrastructure sector, free energy would be huge, and it would really contribute to the economic sector, because we've done studies on this, and without authoritarian rule and with free energy, I had three economists study this, and their joint opinion at the end was, just those two moves would increase everyone's income and assets 6 to 10 times. So imagine right now, whatever your financial situation is, especially if you're struggling, imagine multiplying by 8 times what you've got in the bank and your income, wherever you're working. Imagine multiplying that by 8 times, you know, every month. Then think how you could help other people around you.
Yeah.
You'd have extra money not only to help other people, but to do creative projects. And so, yeah, the economics will set us free. The energy will set us free. Healthy food will set us free. And especially truth in media, which is where you've been one of my heroes for a long time. And you've got a lot of good allies that are now bringing the truth out. There are podcasts, multiple podcasts, which have 5 to 10 times the listening audience on a daily basis as CNN and MSNBC mm-hmm. does in prime time. So that you're not going to hear that from the mainstream media, but it's true because humanity wants the truth. We actually want to get along. We want to thrive. And we're just trying to lay out as good a map as we can of the principles, because we're going to get there through principles, not politics.
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine, in fact, I know I can see on my screen that we've got some listeners with some good questions for you. Are you ready to rock and roll with that?
Absolutely. That's my favorite part.
Let's bring in Ms. Gail Gage. Hello, Gail.
Hello, you guys.
Am I right? Do we have some great questions out there?
Yes, you are right. We do have questions, a lot of questions.
All right.
So should we jump right in?
You Let's ready, Pastor?
Okay. So this is from Arthur. He says, Foster, when will these zero cost energy things take place? We pretty much know what is going on behind the scenes. It seems it will always be squashed.
Well, it's a great question. And it's one that I ask all the inventors that I work with. And what I encourage all the inventors to do, no one has actually chosen to do it yet. But I say to them, if you have a working device, if you want to stay safe, if you want to change the world, then give your knowledge away for free. Actually upload it to the internet so that within, you know, a week, you'll have 1,000 labs all over the planet testing it to see whether or not it works. And that would be unstoppable. And people say, yeah, but I've worked this long and, you know, I've got investors, I need to pay back and I want to make money off this thing. And I say, yeah. And those are two of the reasons. They're really good reasons, but they're also two of the main reasons why we don't have free energy yet. Because I run a scrolling thing with some music in Thrive 2, just a partial list of probably about 30 energy inventors who have been either killed, disappeared, or gagged over, you know, just in the last, since Tesla, about 100 years. Wow. And the list goes on and on. So no one has made it through yet. And I think one of the main missing pieces, the easiest way to do it is if you've got it, then upload it. You'll become the most famous scientist in history if it actually works. It won't do any good for the would-be controllers to try to take you out or threaten you because, you know, it's already out. They can't manipulate things by harming you anymore. So that's usually my first recommended strategy. And then there's a number of other strategies that we're still working with a lot of these groups. There was an inventor from Russia who was working in South Korea. And I had followed his work for years, but I never met him. And he started advertising about a year ago that he had a 10 kilowatt free energy device, magnetic, that was working. So he started marketing it on the internet. And I saw the first ad for it and I go, oh boy, I hope he's got security. Because he was, so for $30,000, you could get a 10 kilowatt device. You could run your house at absolutely no charge forever, or until your machine runs down, which is probably 20 or 30 years. And so I started following this thing. You know, within a week, they had a visit from the Minister of Energy in South Korea, and they had a photo op. You know, he had his entourage, arm around the inventor, we're so proud of you, and all this kind of stuff. And a week later, he was dead. His lab exploded. And the public claim was that he must have been overcharging a battery. Well, this is one of the most advanced engineers on the planet. I think he knows how not to overcharge a battery. So we're still in a very real situation with all the inventors I work with. That my first requisite is you need to have security. And my second requisite is you need to secure your knowledge somewhere that if they do something to you, at least they won't kill off your knowledge. And then you publicize that. So again, it doesn't do any good to take you out. So as I was saying earlier, I think there's so many devices right now in the process of coming out that I think that the multiple strategies, some of them will start succeeding. And I think it will be in the next year to two.
Very exciting.
Awesome. Yeah, it's very exciting. This next question is from Claudio. He asks, what is Foster's take on the Palestinian issue? Oh, dear. We're taking a right turn here.
We're doing a lightning round, a short answer, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's way too big an issue to try to really lay out. But, and I have multiple binders and folders, and I haven't done public presentations on it yet, but I've done a lot of preparation for it. And I would answer that the short answer would be, why is the Palestinian-Israeli situation so intractable? After all these presidents, all these administrations in all three groups have been trying to solve this for as long as I've been alive, and that's not a short amount of time. So why is it so intractable? And I suggest that if you're researching this, you have to really go into the history of Israel. And this is where I need to be very careful. I've said it in Thrive 1. I said it in Thrive 2. I say it all the time in public. You know, I have many Jewish friends. I'm a big fan of Judaism, the spiritual aspect of it and so forth. And Israel is not fundamentally Jewish in the traditional sense. Israel is a creation of the Rothschilds, who are the major dominating family in the global domination agenda. It's a whole different legacy of what David Icke calls the Sabbatean Francus. And it's a group that goes way back, whose agenda has always been to take over the world. So it's not about Hebrew mythology or theology. It's not about protecting the people. It's about taking over the world. And the Rothschilds created Israel as the home base to control oil, and from there to install central banking Rothschild systems, fake money systems, in every country in the world. And there's only about three left that aren't. And let's see, what is it? Syria, Iran, North Korea. And so that's why they're in the crosshairs. You know, when Wesley Clark, the general, visited the Pentagon after 9/11, I'm sure you guys know this well, he was taken aside by one of his buddies there. And he said, Wes, you got to look at this document. I just got this document said, we're going to invade 7 countries in the Middle East in 5 years, and we're going to take them over. And Wes is like, why are we going to do that? Well, this is, and look what's played out. You know, they haven't succeeded in Iran or Syria yet, but, you know, look at Iraq, look at Libya, look at Yemen. It's very clear. The proof is in the pudding. And so I don't believe that the Palestinian-Israeli situation will be solved until the Rothschilds are exposed and taken out of control, because it was, you know, an act of terrorism to drive the Palestinians out of so much of their territory. They're basically in a prison camp now. And then I'm all for any group having a safe haven, but you don't just invade someone in order to do it. There's other ways of working that out. But once again, I don't think it can be worked out. And I have friends living in Palestine and in Israel, and I just hear these excruciating stories from both of them. It won't be worked out till we solve the global domination agenda, because this is the major cockpit for manifesting this agenda for control.
Wow. Claudio, I hope you are satisfied with your answer, because I know the rest of us are.
Yes.
That was a short answer, by the way, as Foster said.
Okay, we're going to shift gears again a little bit here. This is from PG. He says, Foster, do you have a favorite spiritual teaching that you have studied and benefited from? The idea of no separation comes from a non-duality framework. Thank you for all your good work.
Well, thank you, PG. I really appreciate that. And I have studied a ton of them. You know, I was raised Christian until I started asking too many questions at church. And then I studied Buddhism and Hinduism. I studied the Kabbalah. I was really interested in what's at the core of all these different spiritual traditions. And what was exciting for me was I was studying science for decades at the same time that I was doing this. And what I saw was the two began to merge. So I don't consider myself a religious person, religious in the sense of having taken on a particular dogma, a set of beliefs that somebody convinced me of or scared me into or something like that. But I consider myself a deeply spiritual person. I feel that's who I am at my core. And I've practiced meditation and self-hypnosis and yoga and, you know, a dozen different practices very intensely over the years. And then I ran a company in Silicon Valley for 8 years where we had developed the state of the art in brainwave biofeedback technology. So you can literally get feedback on the activity of your brain in different frequencies and, you know, resonance amongst the hemispheres. And we worked with lots of spiritual masters and psychics and yogis and Qigong masters and so forth. So we got to see what a lot of them were doing to the degree to which brain activity reflects consciousness. But it's really the consciousness which interests me. So where the science came together with the spiritual pursuits is that and we lay this out in Thrive 2 again, very scientifically, and we do it. We actually present the unified field theory for the first time in history. We got permission to do that from Nassim Haramein, who's just about to publish the paper that is going to complete Einstein's work and blow everybody away. But he gave us permission to reveal the essence of that in Thrive 2. And so my particular worldview is that we are all part of an infinite, you know, a boundless sea of energy. Call it the cosmos, call it universe, call it cosmic consciousness, whatever. And that sea of energy is alive. Even so-called empty space is full of energy at every single point. And it's part, the entire entirety, which is unbounded. That's a difficult one to wrap our rational minds around. The entirety is conscious and it's all evolving. And it wants us to thrive. All the evidence for my entire life leads to those conclusions. So I believe that spirit is simply a word for who we are. Spirit is the essence of consciousness throughout the universe. Our soul is our individual torus. So it's the antenna that brings the universe, the universal consciousness, through our own worldview into our body to then do our acts this particular lifetime. And then in terms of the unified field, I have in Thrive 2, I talk about what I call the science of love, which is we all want to be in love. We all want to feel great. We all want to thrive. And it's not an endless mystery. I think that there, you know, the cosmos, I think, is, but actually learning to thrive, learning to be love itself is simply learning to align with the unified field at every level. And by that, I mean learning through yoga, sports, whatever, learning to relax and tune your physical body, learning to blend with the flow of emotions and harness the emotions positively for certain things, whether it's making love or doing sports or just, you know, enjoying nature or whatever. And then also mentally learning how to, and this is what we're doing at my company, the Mind Center, which is learning to open your mind at the same time that you focus your mind. So it's like it has the center and it has the open torus. And then to tune your mind to the alpha frequency, to the theta frequency, to the delta frequency, which is basically asleep for most people. Theta is deep meditation. Alpha is kind of just a creative awake state. And then beta is like when you're going around doing stuff kind of preoccupied. Now they've discovered gamma, which is, you know, octaves above any of these frequencies. And this is when you're in bliss, when you're in deep meditation, the gamma kicks in. So there, I saw people that who are real experts who could tune their consciousness the way that you and I would tune a radio, or, you know, flip channels on the remote on our TV. So that's a glimpse of the future, I believe, of spirituality, because spirituality, I believe, can transcend the exclusion and the antagonism that comes out of religions being pitted against each other. I'm in favor of anybody believing anything they want, as long as they don't use it as an excuse to violate anyone else.
And that happens. I'm glad you asked, PG. Thank you.
Yes, yes. All right. Now, this question is from Jennifer, and she says, will Foster name who he thinks are behind 9/11?
I'll name a few.
Okay.
I hope this doesn't get you kicked off of any channels, but this is just my own subjective opinion from 20 years of research and consultation and study with the top experts that I could find, including our host today. I'm not blaming any of my conclusions on you guys, but it's pretty thoroughly researched. And I would say that in terms of organizations or entities, that it's primarily what's called the deep state or the New World Order. It's a global international cabal of secret societies whose intention is to rule the world. And then it manifests through all different sorts of organizations. And in terms of those organizations, I've come to the conclusion that in the political arena in the United States, that the neocons were deeply involved, that the Bushes, the Cheneys, the Wolfowitz, that whole group has got all sorts of footprints in the mud, let's say, or blood on their hands. And then I believe that the Western neocons were deeply embedded with certain elements of the Saudis, and especially with Mossad, which is the primary intelligence agency of Israel. And it's really just it's a Rothschild arm of surveillance and enforcement. So I think those were the three major entities. And then in terms of individuals, I would say the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Bushes, the Cheneys, the Kissinger, Philip Zelikow, and I could go on, but I think those are the all-stars.
So shall we have him back, Gail, to focus in on that question from...
Maybe. That's a good answer. All right. This is from David. He says, I believe Putin... I hear some echoing. Am I echoing to you guys?
No, anyway. I heard it too. Yeah.
Okay. I believe Putin might be fighting this agenda for world domination. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Somebody's done their homework, David. And this is a tricky one. All these questions they have to be really nuanced. There's not a simple black and white answer to any of them. And I'm not a huge fan of Putin any more than I was a huge fan of Trump. But I am a fan of Putin in certain ways, as I am of Trump, because of certain things that they do. There's a lot of things that each of them do that I don't like. But I think each of them have been major players in standing up, at least to some degree, to this global cabal that I have referred to. And I have had extensive dealings with what's called the Asian Dragon Alliance, which is a league of ancient royal families in five countries in Asia. And I've really been behind the scenes with them over years, and just they've been major teachers for me. And they were the first ones to inform me that in general terms, Putin is a good guy. He's working to obsolete the New World Order. And so that put it in a different lens, because anybody who's, you know, been the head of the KGB, you know, they've done some nasty stuff to get into that position. And I know that, you know, he's not allowing protests now in Russia. And I did some very suspicious deaths of political opponents and so forth. However, he's the only major international political figure that I have seen over the last several years who has repeatedly spoken out against the New World Order in very accurate terms. And then he did a speech 2 days before the invasion of Ukraine that he called Empire of Lies, where he just laid the whole thing out. So I'm not in favor of anybody invading anyone else. So I don't condone that part of it. However, I've done extensive research on Ukraine for years, and I have quite a deep understanding of what's going on there. And I understand why Putin, I believe, why he did what he did. He has been warning the West for years not to try to take Ukraine because it borders right on Russia. And he knows he's seen their plans to put all these nuclear missiles right on the border. And he's been warning about biolabs. They didn't want them using, you know, biological weapons either. And now the Biden administration is trying to deny it, but they've been caught red-handed. They've got over 23 biolabs that they have had. Obama was actually over there helping them install them. He's on record. Victoria Nuland, who was behind a lot of the coup, the takeover of Ukraine in 2014, she admitted it to Marco Rubio in a congressional hearing just a few days ago. So the truth is coming out on that. NATO had agreed not to move beyond a certain river in Eastern Europe. They swore to the Russians that they wouldn't do that. Well, they violated that 13 times already. They've taken 13 countries. And so finally Putin said, again in his Empire of Lies, he said, you try to take, and they'd already taken it in a quiet coup. They had already installed Zelensky as a puppet for NATO and for the Western regime. And Putin said, don't do it. I said, I don't want to do it. But if you go in there, in order to defend my people, I'm going to have to fight back. And so, unfortunately, it's another just tragic war that's, I just feel so deeply for all of the individuals, literally, you know, hundreds who are getting injured and killed, millions who are refugees now. And I just pray that this doesn't accelerate into some sort of global war. But the powers that be, the military-industrial complex for the West, you know, now that the Middle East was winding down, they needed a new source of income. And they've been trying to control Russia for a long time. So I think they kind of couldn't resist. And so they're doing it under false flags. Once again, they're not acknowledging why they're doing it or even that they're doing it. So hopefully the kind of information that you're bringing out and that we're trying to bring out in Truth Media will help expose the real culprit behind all this stuff and get rid of wars altogether. Because remember, if you don't have nation states, you don't have war.
Yes. All right. So the next question is from Gene. And he says, how does Mr. Gamble feel the 9/11 Truth Movement as a collective of advocates and activists best strategize after 20 years, not just high level litigation, but also the street activists?
Wow. Yeah. well, one of the best developments in answer to this all, this entire question is on the wall behind each of you. It's Richard Gage Unleashed. I have tremendous respect for what Richard has done for years in optimizing his leverage within certain constraints because of the people that he was representing and the profession he was representing. I've got many other friends in different professions who come to me and Kimberly and say, thank goodness for the work that you do. I'm aware it's just that I would lose my credibility with my network if I went as far as you did right now. And I say, great. You know, I totally understand that we each have our different roles. Ours is connecting the dots. And I think that Richard, even having this conversation in the public media is a real indication of something that's happening all over the world. That now we can take your incredible work with 9/11 Truth and with the science of it and begin to connect it with the amazing work that people have done researching financially and researching politically. So I think that the 9/11 Truth Movement has been doing an outstanding job of creating the foundation for the evidence. And that's why I really, in fact, I would love it if you guys would talk for a minute about the 9/11 crime scene to courtroom, because I know that I worked a little bit with Reiner Fulmich recently, and we're helping him spread the word on his basically taking the a lot of the stuff around the medical scourge that's been permeating the world news and so forth, that Reiner Fulmich is doing, kind of taking it to the court of public opinion. And so they've been having this mock trial, which a lot of people are seeing. So the evidence gets presented in a really responsible way, the way it should be in courts, if they weren't government courts and the governments weren't a part of this agenda. So could you just mention for a moment, for my sake, as well as your audience, what the plan is for that? Because it's exactly the type of thing that I would have been suggesting happen next in the 9/11 Truth Movement.
Wow. Well, I just found that area of our website, because the conference we were talking about earlier is, in fact, a benefit for this film. We've already raised $40,000 to make this film, but it's a $120,000 budget.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons we're having the conference, in addition to the importance of the Pentagon in being a central keystone of declaring 9/11 an act of war. And then through invoking Article 5 of the NATO alliance, dragging a dozen other countries or more into the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. So, but the film itself focuses on the World Trade Center evidence because there has been a submittal to the U.S. Attorney in Manhattan by the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. And this includes 60 exhibits, most of which were put together by AE 9/11 Truth in terms of the evidence, forensic evidence and eyewitness testimony of the World Trade Center's controlled demolition, which is the essence of our knowledge that 9/11 was an inside job. Let's call it the most obvious evidence. So we've now paired with the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry and specifically the litigation director, Mick Harrison. And he and I will be partnering as key central characters in the film in a courtroom being filmed there, bringing in experts, speaking directly to the grand jurors about the evidence, because they will get to see it, because it will be submitted, this film, which is done in a series, evidence piece by evidence piece, dribbled out, not dribbled, but it'll be coming out over the next many months. Mm-hmm. So how exciting is that to have the audience be the actual grand jurors, because it'll be submitted as a supplement to that original petition. And the public will begin to be able to see it free on YouTube as the latest, the most professionally set evidence prepared by the 9/11 Truth Movement yet. In fact, the sequel, if you will, to the movie Unspeakable, just made by Dylan Avery, whom you quoted or mentioned, and AE 9/11 Truth, who worked really hard to put this heartwarming, heart-wrenching story about the family members' cries for justice over the last 20 years. Well, here's the evidence that backs that incredible 20-year history of sorrow and injustice and untruth, backs them up. So We think it's real important too, Foster. I hope that answers your question.
Well, be sure and send me any materials that you have in preparation for the launch of that, because we've got a huge number of truth seekers and 9/11 savvy people in our network. And I would love to make as many of them aware as possible. And also maybe that could end up helping with your funding.
Oh, great. Well, we'll be sure to connect with you and get you out everything that we're producing. So thank you for that. That's really special.
My pleasure. I'm so glad that you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. We're ready for another question? Mm-hmm. We got time? All right. This is from Eric. <question. laughs> This is from Eric. He says, Foster answered the Palestinian question beautifully. If you can, ask Foster if his comment using world domination is synonymous with Zionism, and are there more Christian Zionists than Jewish?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm glad you have to answer it.
I would say it this way. I believe that the danger of Israel is Zionism, not Judaism. I believe that Zionism, as it lives today, is fundamentally an outgrowth of and a description of the Rothschild agenda for world domination. And many, many Zionists do not realize that. And I've met a ton of them who, if your definition of Zionism is just, you know, having a safe homeland for the Jewish people. Well, of course, you know, who wouldn't want that except, you know, Hitler and some other psychopaths along the way. I don't know whether, I know there are a lot of Christian Zionists and a lot of Jewish Zionists, a lot of Jews in Israel get in trouble for calling out exactly what I'm saying. But it's a critical distinction. It's just like with, you know, if someone is only looking at 9/11 as an inside job on was this the United States against the Middle East or something like that? Well, you got to go deeper. That's the spin. You know, there are events happening out there in the world. Then level two of a really effective conversation is it gets spun by the powers that be, but you've got to fight through that. You've got to keep going. And usually the way to do that is investigate. And usually the way you do that is you follow the money. And once you follow the money on 9/11, it will take you to the same culprits who are behind the global domination agenda. And as gnarly as that is, that's the moment when you can start setting yourself free. And by setting yourself free, now you can begin to realize what the truth is behind 9/11 that transcends the idea of nation states or even individual political players and goes to the agenda. And once you realize that, then you can immerse yourself in the truth, not only of the evidence of 9/11, but the evidence of this larger agenda. And therefore you go from, you know, the fourth stage of this. I do a seven levels deep thing with every show that I do. This is how you think critically. The fourth level is when you get to the global domination agenda. The fifth level is when you free your own thinking, when you actually come to realize you're in touch with the truth yourself. The next level, the sixth level, is when you collaborate with other people. So now on a mental level, you're beginning to connect the dots of 9/11 with the dots or connect the dots of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. You connect it with the larger agenda. And then when you realize that and can take effective action in regards to the larger agenda, as well as each individual specific case, that's what leads to the seventh stage, which is actually creating the solutions, the alternatives, which liberate us into a thriving world.
Thank you.
Awesome. Okay. This is a question from John. He says, Lincoln, Kennedy, Ford, and Reagan all were in conflict with the Rothschild Empire at one point. So far, we are 0-5. Does Foster think one day we can bring down this cabal he speaks of?
Well, yeah, that's a good observation. That's exactly the type of connecting the dots that I was talking about.
Yeah.
Do I think that we can bring down this cabal? Absolutely. I cannot overstate my confidence about this. And it's not blind optimism. It's not just a choice. I think I'll take a happy look at this and put on my rose color. It's not that. Anybody who knows our work knows that I immerse for 6 to 12 hours a day and have for 20 to 30 years on different topics. And so I like to say that I see light at the end of the rabbit hole. And it's because, and it's because I went deep enough into the rabbit hole to actually see what that light is.
Oh.
So that I don't mistake it for a train coming the other way. And so I'm very optimistic. And some of the reasons that I'm optimistic is even though these psychopaths have huge amounts of money that they have printed, that they have stolen, that they continue to take from people immorally, there's still a relatively small amount of people. There's probably 5,000 people running the entire thing, and we're 7.5 billion. So imagine when the people who are supporting their pyramid walk away. That pyramid comes down and they come tumbling down, and it's already starting to happen. And, you know, is it because we're smarter than them? No. Richer than them? No. Is it because we're better than them? Well, maybe so. And by better, I mean that those of us who want peace, those of us who want a thriving world for everyone, we're aligned with the unified field. This is what I was talking about before. When you're aligned with the unified field, of course, you're going to honor the sovereignty of every Taurus, every individual human being in that field. So we actually have, and that's what, in terms of physics, that's what, just like in biology, every blood cell, which is a Taurus, wants to be free as it's going through your arteries, collaborating with all the other blood cells to nurture you, to heal you, and all that stuff. It's just really the way it works. But if you get toxins in there, or you're poisoned, and your toroidal blood cells start cramming together, they will create clots, and they will kill you if you don't take care of that. Well, it's the same thing with individual beings. We're all, in a sense, free energy devices. We eat some food, but we're putting out way more energy than we could actually get from the electrons in the food. We are conduits between the space energy and the earth energy, just the same way plants and animals and insects are. So, and we're all designed as an electrical circuit. We have got a North Pole and a South Pole, an electrical field around our body. We are circuits who thrive as long as we are free to move around, to think our own thoughts. Our creativity is unleashed because the circuit is connecting with the entire cosmos. If you cram people into cities, if you cram people into jails, if you put toxic substances in their bodies and bad food and GMOs and glyphosates and chemtrails and, you know, and fluoride, all this stuff is no accident. They're trying to cram people together in order to ultimately have fewer to control and have them be more manageable. So the entire unified field, which is reality itself, boundless energy, and the cosmos itself wants us to be free. So that's what the culprits are up against. And that gives me tremendous confidence, because we've got the life force, we've got truth, which is reality, on our side, and ultimately we've got love on our side. Not love like, well, you know, I really used to be have the hots for this person, but now I don't. Now it's not that kind of love. This is the love I was talking about, where you align with the entire unified field. We've got that on our side, because that's what honest currency and free energy and truth mediums, that's all aligning with the unified field. And I have talked to some refugees from the Illuminati. I've read transcripts that are chilling, and they have this factor that They call it the X factor, where literally they'll be sitting around plotting these dastardly things. And they'll talk about their frustration with, no matter how much money or power or media and so forth we have, there's this thing that we still can't conquer. And they don't even know what it is because they're psychopaths. They don't experience love. They don't experience intimacy. They have no interest in truth. So they don't actually know what love is. Hmm. But most of the human beings on the planet, it's about 97%, they do know what love is. That's what they want. And that's what's pulling us toward obsoleting this cabal. My wife, Kimberly, wants to be on the Truth and Reconciliation Committee, and she would be great. She's got all these task-appropriate jobs for some of these nefarious villains. That would be she has no interest in killing them. She wants them to pay back the money they've stolen, and then be working essentially for the rest of their lives to recompense the people that they've hurt. So, you know, people who've been in charge of vaccines that have, you know, caused autism in, you know, thousands of children would end up taking care of some of these children. They would be changing diapers. They would feeding people. And so she goes on and on about what's the task appropriate nonviolent resolution to actually rebalancing this entire, the wealth gap and the getting away with all these crimes and so forth. So, yeah, I'm very confident. I don't know if I'll live to see a stateless, thriving world myself. It could happen because it's going to go really fast. But the tipping point, I think, has happened already. I think the tipping point happened in Canada with the truckers, because the whole world was watching. They were inspired by the Australian truckers. Now, a lot of my friends are in Washington with the American convoy. A dozen other countries are doing it. But the symbolism is there. And the whole thing in Canada made the agenda so obvious in terms of Trudeau's reaction that I think now the dominoes are going to start to fall. And I think that the first one to fall is going to be, I won't even go into these, the dominoes, because I want to nurture your relationship with YouTube. And some of those dominoes, if I go into them, they may not like them. So use your imagination and stay tuned. But I think the dominoes are starting to fall, and they'll tip one on another, and things are really opening up.
Yeah, and that's a great point to end on, because it's very hopeful, Foster.
I am.
You've not only poured out your heart to all of us and all of our listeners here, we're all like, I think, lifted by the hope that is real, that's tangible. We can feel it, and so you brought that to us. And man, that's something that I hope that I can get more of, so that I can share it in some sort of functional way with the world. Does that sound like something you'd like to help me with, Gail and Foster?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, the three of us, we're allies. You know, we haven't joined together based on race or gender or age or nationality. We've bonded over truth and freedom, and that's what's happening all over the world. I'm in touch with thousands of groups, and it's just happening everywhere. That's one of the things that gives me so much confidence as well.
Yeah. This is great news, bringing that awareness of your contacts out there like that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I listen too much to the 9/11 truth movement, some sectors of it that say, you know, 20 years, no progress by those metrics that they're looking at. And you're looking at a different set of metrics. And I think
let me comment on that for just a second, if you will, because I think this will be important to your audience. You know, of course, all of us would have liked to have seen more traction and more change around 9/11 truth. But, you know, since I study all of the sectors, what I've seen is that the kind of research and collecting of evidence that you now have, that you'll be bringing out in this series and so forth, that will combine with the evidence around health freedom, around banking schemes, around blackmail. And it goes on and on in every single sector. And what's going to happen is soon all of these foundation stones that you and others have been creating will all be the foundation of the entire world waking up and going, oh my God, it makes sense. And it's in every sector. Now I understand what's going on. And they'll pull their support away from the nefarious actors so fast that the house of cards will come down. And that's why I'm working, you know, primarily and with the Solutions Hub and a lot of other groups on making sure that these alternative ways of relating are in place when that house of cards comes down. So as frustrating as it's been, it will not have gone for naught at all.
Yay.
That's right. I agree.
Foster, thank you for giving us such an incredible gift, the treasures from yours and Kimberly's heart. Foster Gamble of Thrive On, we appreciate you and we'll have you back. That's my promise.
Thank you. I will look forward to it. It's been an honor to be on. And anybody who wants to follow up on any of this, go to thriveon.com.
Thriveon.com. There it is. Is there a dash in there somewhere?
Nope.
Thrive On without the dash.
Right.
.com. Thanks again.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on yet another informative and soul-stirring episode of Richard Gage 9/11 Unleashed. We'll be on the air again next week with another very special guest in the 9/11 Truth Movement and beyond. Visit us at richardgage911.org, where you can find our schedule, learn about the WTC evidence, and of course, sign up for our emails and support us. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.